Yeah, so something that's leveled quite often at electronic musicians from acoustic musicians, because we're always battling with each other all the time, you know, is that, you know, we don't have any virtuosity and we just press play. And this is a really demeaning and condescending comment, which I've heard quite a few times actually over my career. When you're DJing with a CDJ mixer, okay, you press play. But when you're working with electronics, we don't do that sort of thing, except that you know, there is that idea of starting a signal and that it's running continuously. And these synthesizers, once they're switched on, that's like the pressing play part, right? You know, you switch it on and it just, the voltage just starts to flow. So what you do with it from that point on, and how do you turn that into music or compelling experience for the audience, is where our virtuosity is as electronic musicians. So the playing part and the performing and the dials is all one part of it, but this is quite far down the line, actually. And once it's all, once you switch it on and it's plugged in, you know, it's rock and roll. But before that, there's a lot of different types of design thinking going on in the process. So that's what I'm talking about today. And I want to, maybe none of you have figured this out yet, but it occurred to me that a lot of electronic musicians that I know, we invent our instrument every time we play, and every time we go into the studio, we create and design and engineer a musical instrument. And the modular synths, I think they really physically demonstrate that, because, so I mean, these screws, you know, and this set of choices and these modules, and you know, this one here. See, that's something that people don't do very much modular synths on stage, but I've always wanted to do it. Back in the day, we used to have to do this. I don't know if any of you know an electronic musician called Neil Landstrom, but he was quite well known for, he would go on stage with his the Emu SP-1200, I think, drum machine, and to tune down the toms, you have to literally open the case, go onto the card and turn down the screw. He would do this live on stage. You know, so there's this electrical engineering aspect, which I think is often overlooked, that when Björn or Xavier or myself, we have to think about what we're going to go out to do the show with or to go on tour with. And when we have to be engineers first, we've got to sit down, and with the modular especially, we've got to sit down and say, right, this is how much space I've got, this is my case, this is where my head is at, you know, this is what I want to try and do more or less, you know, but I've got the show coming up, the flight's leaving in about 5 hours, and you know, I haven't really figured this out yet. So we have to start by stuffing modules in there, and that's where you have to think like an engineer. And I'm always, my engineering brain is not that good, because I always like put too many in and then I can't fit the other one in, or I don't have enough power cables, or the wires don't fit. And the other part that's got me back in touch, the modular synth has got me back in touch with this sort of engineering design idea, mindset, is that I DIY a lot of my modules, so I put them all together. Now, I started doing DIY from kits because I was pretty low on income actually, and wanted to build up my system to a level where I could do more with it than just oscillators or something. And the cheapest way to do that was to save money by putting them together yourself. So I got a soldering iron and I soldered and put some time into the, just following the instructions. It's like doing a recipe when you're cooking in the kitchen, you know, you just really, if you follow the instructions, hopefully at the end you're going to get your module. But along the way of doing that, you start to get familiar with things like transistors and resistors and capacitors and pots and the stuff that you take for granted when you work with hardware from the manufacturers, from the factories. You know, you just never know what's under the hood. And it's just really nice to look at these things. It opened my mind when I started to do a lot of them, because I was thinking, why are all these components in there? I've heard a lot about transistors and compression and all of this high-end studio gear. So like, what is it that makes them sound, these little things, and why are these Russian transistors particularly better than these other ones? So you start to think along these terms and look it up on the internet and start to find out a lot more stuff about the instrument. So this is all the engineering part, you know, that's stuff I never thought about before when I got a box from Roland or something like that. It was just, the instrument is designed for me, I just need to learn how to play it. Whereas this is, I need to learn how to design the instrument, how to put it together, and then how to play it, and then how to do a really good show with it, you know, hopefully. So, another thing, because Rudiger's put this idea out there, you know, about the why, and why do this? Why should I go through all of that process and burn my fingers and have to crawl around on the floor looking for a tiny component that I've dropped, you know? Why go through all that when I could just buy a drum machine and press play? So the thing is, I think for me it goes quite deep, the electronics aspect of electronic music, you know, it's in its defining part of it. And recently, a couple of years ago, I met sound artist Kabir Carter, and he has this idea that all these components, oscillators, filters, resistors, capacitors, transistors, all that stuff was developed by the military, you know, for military purposes, and primarily like all of that stuff was developed and refined during the war and for wartime purposes. So he has this idea that any type of application of that technology for creative purposes is the fundamental reason for buying this stuff and using it and creating music with it, you know. So if you start from that very, very nice bedrock position, the aesthetics of the music that is going to come out of this system is rather irrelevant, actually. I don't think it's that important to be able to do notes. I certainly don't connect keyboards. I don't play pianos, keyboards, and stuff like that. And I'm not interested in pitch space whatsoever. So this machine is really, really good for that because it keeps me away from it a lot. So that's what this particular instrument that I have performed with it once in Vienna, at the Flug Vienna. I don't know if any of you have been there, but it's quite a noise place, very grungy. And I designed this specifically for that concert. And I thought I'd bring it here to go through it a bit. So these modules, you might see they're all the same. Does anyone know this one? It's by Bifaco Barcelona DIY crew, pretty fun guys. And it's essentially a echo delay pedal. So you know what an echo delay pedal is, but it's a really bad one. Okay, so it's based on the
PT8329.
The echo chip that it's a very cheap, crappy echo chip that's was used in like every karaoke system in Japan for a long time, and the Bifaco guys just got a big batch of them and designed an instrument for people to build their instruments with, which is this one, the crush delay. Now, what I was fascinated about by it is that on the front panel, when you come up and have a look, there's a range on the big knob, which is normally the delay time. And there's a range where it says clean, fast. And then there's a range that just goes slow, crush. Right, so what sort of echo pedal would have that on it?
What's the difference?
Just the idea of dirt and the words like clean and dirty and stuff like that on an instrument is really interesting anyway. So you've got this knob. And then what happens, I'm going to have to put this down now. So if you can't hear me, and just... So what happens with one of these?
I can be your
lifestyle. Oh, it's all right. You need to go a little bit. Right, so we like this. It's going to work. Okay, yeah. So normally you would give it some kind of impulse. I think I've got something here. That's it. See, this is the thing when you're patching life, is nothing ever works until it does. Okay, so we can explore the crapness of it now. And then you've got a feedback. And you can already hear that's not a very clean feedback. It's got some deterioration from the low signal part, and as you turn it down, it pitch bends. Now, as an instrument design philosophy, so I'm talking about not my level of instrument design, this, but the Bifacco one, the guys that went through the whole effort of making that circuit and manufacturing it and making the PCBs and designing the whole thing. Now, they designed a circuit that was broken, and they wanted it to be broken in a specific way. So they designed that way of breaking. It's from this circuit bending movement, right? So, but I love that idea of like, how can you, who thinks of taking to market something that's fundamentally broken as a creative tool for people to work with? And I think the kit is like at £80 or something. And if you want to buy it already built, you can pay 150 quid for something that is sounding really, really bad most of the time. So I bought 6 of them, of course. Actually, what happened was I bought 2 because I had to buy a couple for my friends, you know. And at the Bifacco modular meetup, which they hold a big one in Barcelona every year, I was at a club with Manu at one of the parties, and I said to him, you know what, I love that crush delay, it's so brilliant, I'd love to just have 6 or 8 of them all wired into each other, and like, that's it, you know. And a year later, he wrote to me and said, you know, that thing you spoke to me about, well, we're just upgrading the crush delay 2 to be crush delay 3, and I've got a load of them lying around here. Do you want them? I said, yeah, okay, brilliant. You can build that thing you talked about. I can't believe he remembered that when he did. And then sure enough, they arrived. So I've got it here. And that's what I'm going to try and do when I've stopped talking about stuff, is show you a little bit about how that works. So what happens when you connect so many broken modules that have designed to be broken in a certain way together, and in the end back. So you go from the output of one to the input of the next, to the input of the next, to the input of the next, and at some point you can get these feedback lines out, so that you can get the dirt coming out of some of these. So you inject them back into the start again, and it becomes a
loop.
Non-linear dirt instrument. Now, we heard from Xavier that he's more interested in notes and precision control and performance. And when I was listening to him speak, and I just thought, oh, this is exactly the opposite. You know, it's like I've engineered myself a situation that is really risky, that it is basically built on malfunctioning equipment, you know. And I'm prepared to go on stage and perform with that. So what it feels like, because some of you might ask that question, you know, what does it feel like to stand there and do that live? Well, it's, some people would find it completely nerve-wracking, having so many unknowns and so much possibility for basically deafening the whole audience. You know? But I find it really, really inspiring. and the reason is because I'm constantly, I'm thinking really, really fast about how to avoid that situation of deafening everyone, you know. And so I'm trying to control the parameters in such a way that we're right on the edge of absolutely uncontrollable situation. And that's what most of the concentration is about. But on the way, the system is, it's like a something that just, like a slimy thing that keeps throwing dirt in your face. And so what happens is it makes me react. And I react and try to control things. So there's no one dial here that I know that if I turn this, the sound is about to evolve into the, you know, into a particular place. It doesn't do that. It just, things, you could, as I described to you the circuit, right, you know, there's delay lines. So if you do an event, if I turn something here, I won't, really won't hear the direct effect of it. What I'll hear is the influence of what I did on that evolving system and how it's growing. And that is really unpredictable. So what happens is you constantly being stimulated and constantly being motivated to seek interesting areas in all of that dirt and crush. Okay, I've made my job a little easier by bringing in some other modules. So that's what the other row is here. Traditionally in echo delay, there's an element of filtering in the feedback chain, which gives these nice echoes that lose some of their high end and they become warmer. And that's been, filters have been built into echo delays since the early tape delays. And so I just introduced some of those, and I have in Eurorack, there's so many magnificent filter designs, analog filters with lots of non-linear qualities. There's also some great digital filters. So I bought some of those in here. And this is, when you come and look at it, you'll see that there's also lots of, the Bifaco guys also introduced a lot of possibilities for you to modulate some stuff in here. So you can modulate the how much input signal is sent into that dirt system, the dry, wet, you know, you can crossfade these, you can crossfade the feedback. There's these switches called crush, which...
So a little crazy.
They put those switches in, and you can trigger them all with CV. I don't really know what they do exactly. I put them together, and I've looked at the circuit, and it's going like this all over the place, and you've got no idea what those things do. But I love the idea that they you know, probably really designed that with somewhat precision. That makes that particular type of broken circuit. So anyway, what am I getting at? I'm trying to talk about these, the reason why I enjoy using electronics to create music as opposed to the computer and software is primarily that it's risky, it's inaccurate, it lacks precision, it's everything that I need when I've been working with the computer too much, and you know, I hate the, sometimes I get overwhelmed with all this stuff, you know, everybody's just, it's so precise that they're controlling the very way we think and we behave, you know, they're absolutely using digital precision to change our behavior and the way we fundamentally are, and machines like this are like giving it back again and saying, no, these circuits are all anything. They can be anything. They can. They're not precise. You can't find these exact numbers anymore. So it's. I find it very liberating and very inspiring to work to put together and engineer modular synthesizers, and to formulate ways of using them in my work and in my performance. Aside from that, they sound amazing, especially in the low end. So something about the bass, especially designers like this one, Steady State Fate, the Entity, and this is a bass voice. It's like it's been designed just to do low end bass. It's my only oscillator in here, by the way. You might have noticed that I do have something. And that brings in the little rhythmic element that I do need after about half an hour of crush. You know, I need to have something. And what else? So, yeah, they sound amazing because of their non-linearities. That's the other thing. So the circuits, especially if you've DIY'd them like I have, because I'm not the best DIY person in the world, like maybe too much solder here and there or the wrong thing in the wrong place. So you end up with, they all sound different, basically, you know. So you end up with a lot of stuff that is really difficult to model in software. It's really difficult to make software break like they do. I programmed my own DSPs, digital signal processing in Kima. And I know how difficult it is to make very organic, very natural sounding error. And that's what fundamentally makes these synths sound really good. And people do need precision, so you do get a lot of digital stuff. And I have some here. I've got 10-pole clocks, and like you can put these, it was a good description that we said about these small computers. They only do one thing. So this one is a clock. It's really good at doing different types of clocks and keeping them all in time. And that's important when you're trying to do rhythmic music. So you do need a bit of that. I think I might try and do some live patching, because that's the other part of this that I wanted to talk about, which is as audience, you normally see the end result of a long process of that design thinking, you know, like this beautifully scored and normally I'm patched, pre-patched and ready to go, and I'm fully annotated and I turn up and just play, right? But I thought it would be good to talk about the other really big part of modular synthesis, which is the patching, which is all about the decision making that goes on to design a more or less stable instrument you can go out and tour with. And that's why I thought I would patch live. I could do it and talk about what I'm doing as I'm doing it, but I think I'd like to just try and patch up that feedback situation through some filters and bring in a rhythmic element, possibly. How much time do I have?
Quarter of an hour,
yeah, that should do it. So you have to be prepared for some parts that where nothing might be happening and I'm puzzling and looking puzzled, but don't be stressed out, because I'm in complete control. And I do have a volume knob, but if it's really excruciatingly loud, just, you know, I won't see anyway. Before I do that, questions about anything else? Would you like me to elaborate on some of the things I've touched on, these topics and themes? Yes?
You know, you talked about this with computers. You like more of the computers. Now I don't have so much money. I have more like an analog. I'm a musician. Analog musicians. I was playing the BCB rack. Have you played with that before?
Yeah, now VCV rack is interesting because it's, so as to, other people know what VCV rack is? It's an open source virtual modular. So there's a lot of the same instrument designers that have built these modules also, especially, really the only one, the easiest ones to appear are the digital ones, not the analog ones, because they're difficult to model. So I don't think there's a crush delay on there.
Yeah, that's,
is there?
That is, but you have to pay.
Sorry. It wasn't happy about being modeled. No. But yeah, it's really cool because it's free and open source, and you can also write your own DSP and codes and design instruments. So it's blowing up the instrument design even more, you know, more diverse. It's giving a lot of opportunities for interesting modules, because to be honest, all of these have been done 100 times over, so we're going to see some diversity in the VCV rack. But I think it's really interesting because it's between the two. So you can just have a few modules and then put the rest on the VCV or even in a portable computer like that. With, you know, so I'm also really into software because manufacturing hardware, manufacturing, I mean, environmentally, it's like something that we shouldn't really be doing anymore. But I think there's a point where it's all right to put something together. So I'm not interested in having a giant system, by the way, like some people do. Well, I do have more modules, but I try to keep it under control and work with software as much as possible as well. The workflow that I think Björn and I have talked about this, and he does it quite a lot, you know, it's like to work between the two things. So you have this sound world, and you can take it and put it into the computer, manipulate it different ways, and then take that back out over here, so you've got hands-on. And that workflow is really productive. So I don't think it's good to be against software and pro hardware. They both bring different things. And in the end, it's about the amazing sounds that we can make live on the PA right now. So let's do it. I'm going to put this over here. I've actually always wanted to do this, so Frankenstein's Labs is the right place. So first of all,